Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gilcast. I am Davis Maddock. You are either listening to this on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast feed or the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Football Podcast feed. Sammy Reed on vacation this week. He's just sitting on the beach in Mexico. We were just sweating the shit out of the Eagles. We took the Eagles in Survivor, and he's just out in Puerto Vallarta sipping Mai Tais. So, special guest this week, as always, Nate Noling is going to be with me, but Mr. Justin Herzig from EstablishTheRun.com is joining us. And of course, the people's favorite Blender. I got to hand it to you, man. I said during the week, I said, Sammy's going to be gone. We want people that far and away, you were the number one most requested ask. People like when you come on the Gilcast, Blender.
They hate my voice, though.
Well, I find your voice oddly soothing because I've listened to you do so many hours of soccer DFS podcast, so it doesn't bother me, but this is what the people wanted. We are recording this. I mean, Jalen Hurts just scored that rushing touchdown against the Buffalo Bills about 97 seconds ago, so this is coming to you fresh in our four-man. Davis Maddock scores 162.14 points. Nate Noling and Justin Herzig unknowingly duping each other with 160.56 points, and Blender plays the double tight end team. He scores 138.86 points. And you know what? Sammy was about to have a losing day because Sammy and I played the same team. I swapped. Sammy did not swap, I think, because he just didn't really care. He got a 5:30 invite from someone he didn't know, and so he just rolled it. And he was going to lose, guys. Sammy was going to be on the beach, and he was going to lose. And then Jalen Hurts scored a 18-yard rushing touchdown in overtime. So that's the story of the Gilcast, right? Sammy on the beach making money despite, purposely playing bad, essentially.
It is. What it's unreal. So you guys had the chalky – you were on the chalky train team.
Yes. So
that was the most duped team in the $25 double up, at least.
So this was the most duped team. This was the team that I swapped off of. I played Jalen Hurts, Isaiah Pacheco, Jonathan Taylor, Rashad White, Justin Watson, Tank Dell, Josh Downs, Trey McBride, and the Chiefs defense. We're gonna do the rest of the show before we start talking about swapping stuff. So Herzig, you and Nate played the same team. I got no issues with what you guys played. I think it was a good team. I have two questions. The first being Lawrence versus Hurts. What was just sort of your thought process on that? And then how did you end up with Ramondre in the flex? Because it was in sort of the range of like being within a point or a point and a half of the optimals, but was not quote unquote the optimal. How'd you come up with that?
Yeah, I'll go first. I think the Trevor Lawrence versus Hurts for me came down to two things. One, I didn't really do much with the money. Like, I was trying to use that money more, and I was like, okay, I'm going from Stevenson, getting up to like ETN or someone. I knew I was going to be playing Justin Watson. So what am I doing with that extra cash? And I just didn't have enough like wide receivers or elite running back to spend up with. And then also, as we got closer to lock, the weather just kind of started sounding pretty ugly in that Buffalo Philly. Total wasn't really changing, but it sounded like that second half was just going to be abysmal. And turned out the opposite where, I mean, it felt so sharp when Jalen Hurts had like, what, we were joking, 37 yards at halftime or something ridiculous.
I think he did though, like literally. I mean, he seemed, I think he had 84 passing yards at half, to be fair.
Insane. And then the Ramondre. So this lineup, I think, was Christian Kirk instead of Ramondre would have been like the more optimal.
That was the dupe. That was the dupe train.
Okay. And my thought was just looking at it, like, I mean, this was a great matchup for Ramondre. He's actually been getting a little more volume. I don't care who's playing quarterback on that team. Like, he has actually seen a little more kind of usage and efficiency. And Christian Kirk, like with Zay Jones back, it's not a guaranteed smash. Like, I mean, I think three of his last games, he only had like six targets or two out of three last games. So that's where I felt it was. Ramondre just feels it felt like a little better cash option.
All right, Blender, you did roughly the same thing that these guys did. You played Trevor Lawrence, you played Jonathan Taylor, you played Rashad White, you played Tank Dell, you played Josh Downs, you played Trey McBride, you played the Patriots defense, but you opted for no Michael Pittman Jr., for Christian Kirk and Dalton Kincaid.
I'm glad everyone chose to play the sixth option on the Chiefs for one target. Get there on one pass. But that essentially, I mean, I make my cash teams by I aggregate projections and I run like the top 10 and then I pick one. So like it's a 90-second process at most. And to me, the decision.
So thanks for coming out. Thanks for joining the program, Blender.
Right, but I mean, but there's a in between all those lineups, there's like one. It's 1 point of mean.
Yeah,
but that doesn't mean that the variance is different on the position. So I prefer to choose the ones that are the narrowest ranges. So I saw it's like okay, the optimal was literally the one that the dupe train was I had Hurts and Watson in that lineup with Rashad. Either you played Rashad White and the Patriots defense, or Pacheco and the Chiefs defense, 2v2. And then right. I'm like, well, it's cash. Do I want a 3K wide receiver that his prop is 1.5 minus one? I mean, like on receptions, I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I'm like, okay, if I don't play Watson, what's the team? And then that's the team that I.
So I think you know what? I mean, in like 0% of the range of outcomes, am I ever playing Kincaid? But I don't think that your thought process of I don't want to play Justin Watson.
I wanted to play Ramondre Stevenson over Christian Kirk. I thought Ramondre was a very sharp. I played him in a bunch of GPP lineups. I preferred him over Christian Kirk, but I didn't have the spot for that. I still need three wide receivers. And then Josh Downs at 4,800. Yeah, he's $1,800 more than Justin Watson, but he actually he's going to get five for 50 type. Dalton Kincaid is a similar type of guy.
Josh Downs accomplished something I maybe have never seen before.
13
Josh Downs,
targets.
More targets than fantasy points. You really do not see that on DraftKings.com all that often. Now, Blender, like you said, I think the Justin Watson stuff, I mean, really, we should probably spend some time talking about it because this was sort of like Marvin Mims in week one when we all just kind of had this collective hallucination that this $3,000 wide receiver was going to crush. And I mean, look, I was just as much of a part of it as anyone, you know, right? McKinnon's out, Tony's out, Hardman's out. He ran all these routes. It was the fewest routes that Marquez Valdes-Scantling had run since he signed as a member of the Kansas City Chiefs. But, you know, Nate, what we forgot was that Justin Watson was running about 75% of the routes for the Chiefs last year and was Chris Hogan. I mean, he was a cardio king, and the people who played him got so lucky to get the scramble drill touchdown.
For sure. To me, it wasn't about Justin Watson in a vacuum. It was about like what he allowed me to do. And I thought the Michael Pittman and Tank Dell combo was the sharpest move to make in cash. I do think Ramondre over Kirk was an edge that I felt really good about, but I thought the other edge was everyone was deciding between Tank and Pittman, and getting both I thought had a significant edge. And to me, that's what Watson allowed me to do. It wasn't that I thought Watson was like the greatest value play we've ever had. It was more, he's a play who's going to be on the field for Patrick Mahomes running routes. Like, and he allows me to get these two wide receivers that I think are the two best wide receiver values on the whole slate. So yeah, it to me, it's less of Justin Watson and more of like what he allowed you to do. And I think people didn't understand how good Pittman and Tank together were.
Well, to be fair, I wanted to play Pittman over Tank, but I didn't want to.
Well,
have
that would have been. I would have given you. I would have given you.
I didn't want to play both the receivers and their backup running back.
Yeah, you would have been, well, oh yeah. I mean, okay, Herzig, let's talk a little bit about Jonathan Taylor. If I would have told you, if I would have shown you the playing time breakdown and the touch distribution between Zach Moss and Jonathan Taylor, and I would have said, this is what you're getting. I mean, how fast would you have excluded Jonathan Taylor from all your shit, seeing how much Zach Moss was playing?
I mean, it has been quite the roller coaster for Jonathan Taylor. Like, we finally, the last 2 weeks, we finally get the Jonathan Taylor usage and we're like, okay, we can trust it. And then Zach Moss just comes right back. And like the entire 2 minute drill at the end of the half was all Zach Moss as well. He was in on a goal line early on. I don't know. I feel like I've been fading Jonathan Taylor all year from like best ball and mostly DFS perspective. And I finally jump in on it and I feel lucky to have gotten those two touchdowns. But wait, can we Justin Watson real quick? I want to say with the 3000, I think this was a mean median play because I agree with Blender that like there was a decent chance this is going to be a zero. So like from a mean, I mean, okay, it's fine. We expect it from like that median, but the highest target, the highest targets percentages for the past two games were the highest any receiver for the Chiefs have had all year. And those were both Justin Watson. And so like there was this scenario that he was actually eclipsing him, becoming that kind of number one wide receiver. And if he did get those, how, what do you get? How many targets last week? I know it was like 29% target share. That was at least 11. In the cards.
Yeah.
That was at least in the cards for a 3000 wide receiver. At the end of the day, I just play cheap wide receivers that have one touch, one target and one touchdown. Rondale Moore, Justin Watson. We'll see what it is.
So
next
true.
Week.
It's so true. It's so true. It's so true. Literally.
Trenton Irwin the week before week that. It's been every
Oh, that's right.
Trenton Irwin.
And it was the first, like first series, maybe even like first pass of the game was, ah, oh, yeah, there we go. That's the name of the game. Find the cheap receiver. You're going to get one target, but it's going to be a touchdown. Easy game.
So in retrospect, I do think probably the field, like optimal distribution, the ownership should have been closer between Greg Dortch and Justin Watson. That's not, it's not how it turned out. I did. I mean, I was too deep in the weeds this morning. I was looking at the touch, the snap distributions in the Browns game that Wilson was out, but Pascal played. That was the Clayton Tune game where they gained like 87 yards on offense. And Dortch actually played 44% of the snaps there, but it was like all passing down stuff, and Hollywood played the entire game. So I was like, these are pretty indicative. I maybe should have thought about that a little bit more, but we are too far in this podcast before I've delivered myself. Just the largest dunk I could have. I made the 2015 idiot error. I was not paying attention this morning, and I left Rashad White, who was in the early games, in my flex position instead of Isaiah Pacheco. Now, obviously, what is funniest about this is that I did not play Trevor Lawrence in my lineup, and I did not play Michael Pittman Jr. in my lineup, so I was pretty sure I was behind. I was like, I thought I was probably behind. Oh, I was behind your guys' team by a lot, and I was behind the median teams by a good bit. So I end up swapping, but I think I'm realizing that if I would have had that flex position open, I would not have played the team that I did. And no, I would have played,
you got lucky.
I would have played Josh Allen. I would have played either Khalil Shakir, which I ended up doing anyways, or Gabe Davis. And then I would have ended up with another bum, probably Bill, in the flex. But because I had the Byron flex locked up and I could only play a running back, I swapped. What I eventually ended here, this is my team. I played.
This is the longest story in the history of Gilchrist.
Yeah, so I swapped Hurts to Kyler. I swapped Isaiah Pacheco to Kyren Williams. I swapped Justin Watson to Khalil Shakir, and I swapped the Chiefs defense to the Broncos defense. So ran Pierre on literally every single one of those, other than Kyler versus Hurts. Owned the libs yet again. I mean, that's the story of the year, Nate.
I was so tilted when at 12:10 I look at Davis's lineup and I go, oh my, I cannot believe this. He locked. And I knew you were going to be dust and need to.
Oh, had, like, it, there was no there was way no it way. Could have existed. Ruining, missing the flex and being like, obviously I knew I was going to have to swap.
Yeah.
You called your swap at like 12:15. It doesn't matter. Like, Rashad White was at 96 yards. You already told yourself there's no way he's getting the bonus. You already built in your mindset, like, I am swapping no matter what. I've screwed myself over with the flex. And then to actually swap into Kyren, 41 points for Mister. I'm only going to get like, you know, 2-1 on the actual touches, Kyren, and it doesn't matter. Yeah, all hail Davis Swap.
Well, I'd rather be lucky than good, but that's truly the theme of the year. Like Nate has done this, Sammy has done this. I mean, we've all on this program swapped into, all three of us swapped into the Kelsey Giga Burger. I swapped
swaps.
The Dax. I mean, it's been unbelievable. I guess Blender, you looking at your lineup with Christian Kirk with 12 points, Downs with 9. Were you thinking about swapping at all, or you were just like, I have Trevor Lawrence, like I'm home free.
I think I was fine. I also have Kincaid,
yeah,
with McBride, so I know I'm not going to run into that many Kincaid lineups because I have McBride. I'm blocking McBride. I got the Patriots defense against people that are having the Chiefs defense, because it's not like the Patriots defense really was that as owned as I thought it was going to be.
No, because everyone ended up doing
twice as owned in the double.
People needed the $100. There were a bunch of lineups where people needed the $100.
And I thought that Rashad White and Pacheco and Taylor, like those are the running backs that I'm up against. So it's like I have two of them. Like, I think Rashad White 16 against Pacheco is fine. So
yeah, I don't think you should have swapped.
What would I swap? I mean, I also you think and go, what am I really swapping to? I guess wide receiver positions are. I mean, essentially,
I didn't have Kirk in anything, so I didn't have a sense of how owned he was. Like how owned
was
30, Kirk?
34, 35 in double ups.
Yeah, Kirk was pretty owned.
You're pretty. Don't you feel like you're pretty far behind if you have Kirk and you know that he just got smoked by MPJ? Or is that whatever?
I still have Tank in my line. I mean, from an ownership perspective, I look at this. And remember, I'm also mostly playing head-to-heads. So it's not like I'm not just looking at like, oh, what's the double-up line? I'm looking at my head-to-heads, and I'm seeing that I'm what, 48 points clear of other lineups that have, yeah, like one extra player from me. And I know I'm blocking McBride already. And I know that they have the Chiefs defense in their, so I'm like, I already know what I'm up against. I'm up against essentially Hurts Watson types of teams. And I'm like, well, I got Lawrence.
How owned was Pacheco and stuff? Was Pacheco like super chalk?
40%
or was that
in the double ups I saw 40%.
Yeah. So pretty much every team in cash games was some variation of Lawrence or Hurts, some combination of Jonathan Taylor, Rashad White, Isaiah Pacheco, Ramondre Stevenson at running back, Michael Pittman Jr., Christian Kirk, Josh Downs, Tank Dell at running back.
Justin Watson.
Did anyone play Dorch? No one had the stones to play Dorch, probably.
No, no one played Dorch.
Yeah. And then McBride.
I saw
and
some Deontay Johnson, by the way. 4,900 Deontay Johnson.
Okay, there's got to be some site that's doing this, because every week Deontay Johnson is about 13% owned in the massive $50 double up, and I never get where that's coming from. I gotta say,
Derrick Henry was the other guy.
Derrick Henry was more owned than Rashad White in double ups.
I know, it was nuts. There
Derrick
must have
Henry
been one
was
site
more owned
that
than
just
Jonathan Taylor in GPPs. I was by double.
There must have been one site that was just crazy projecting Henry, because yeah, he was in a lot of head-to-heads.
I gotta say, Justin and Nate played the right team. Everything like knowledge before the slate, seeing the slate play out, you guys definitely played right. Honestly, for me, the reason why I did not play your guys' team, the Lawrence team that I looked at didn't have Ramondre, it had Pacheco in a downgraded defense. I think it had Pacheco in the Eagles. But really, to me, at the end of the day, I just did not want to play Trevor Lawrence. It was a playing scared moment of being like, I've seen Trevor Lawrence put up too many 16 balls, and I've seen Jalen Hurts put up too many 19 balls. But I guess really at the end of the day, the key to the entire slate was Zay Jones, right? So it was Zay Jones. You don't play Christian Kirk because Zay Jones is back, and you play Trevor Lawrence because Zay Jones fixes everything that's wrong with the Jaguars offense.
I think playing Trevor Lawrence was having faith in CJ Stroud. That was really the play. We just had faith that Houston at home was going to be able to keep pushing them. And I think the Jacksonville games where Lawrence hasn't done much is because they've just kind of, it's been slow play, it's been a slog. They've kind of just run it because the opposing team like just wasn't good. But each of Houston games, Stroud throws for his 300, 400, 500 plus yards. And that forced Lawrence to actually kind of keep up. And that was the kind of confidence to that we weren't going to get another Lawrence stud.
Yeah. The only other decision I was really struggling with was because I had the salary in my build to go Rashad White to Pacheco. And I was waffling on that because I just a late week injury, like a Friday night knee, even though he's good to go, I'm like, if there's even somewhat of a risk, these guys are half a point of projection difference. Why am I playing into that fragility? But then I just stuck with
that's,
White.
That's definitely one where if it goes bad, you are just kicking yourself. Where like, if he does leave in the second quarter, you're like, I'm such an idiot.
My thought there was I almost did it just to get the late swap flexibility because the way we played it, all three running backs were in the early games. And so if things kind of went crappy, all I really had to swap was like Justin Watson and Trey McBride. And that would have been like Njoku. Like MVS or Shakir or something. Like I was trying to figure it and it wasn't pretty. So I almost thought of, hey, let me consider the Pacheco just to give me some additional flexibility. But then I was like, nah, just play the stones.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other guy that I think we haven't talked about that was pretty owned was DeMario Douglas for Patriots. But I was not playing anyone
from that game.
I mean, Ramondre's workload is different, but DeMario, not gonna do that.
Ramondre and Patriots. I'm surprised Patriots weren't higher on. I know you're right because the trains ended up getting people off of it, but like that felt like going against the Giants, like this Giants team with DeVito back there taking so many sacks. I don't know how that wasn't like, start from here, lock it in.
Yeah, I think it was just a function of the trains. This was the biggest train week we've had since week two. 7.8% of the $25 dull bulb was on the same.
Because there was only like, there was 196 teams. There was only like 16 total clicks for eight roster spots in play. So that's just going to lend itself to big time trains because people are going to find it by accident. I know it's going to be a week like that. When every DFS chat I'm in, someone posts the team, right? Like they all use different projections. They all have their own opinions on all the sites and they all come to be like, oh yeah, this is probably the right team. And I'm like,
when even Sammy and his ass backward way of building lineups gets to the train, it's going to be popular.
Yeah. Sammy from the beach. Go ahead.
People played Etienne, played the Etienne. Probably saw the Etienne lineup.
Nate had that. Nate posted that this morning in our chat as like a potential option.
Yeah, but the workload stuff got me off Etienne. His workload over the last couple weeks has not been what we had seen earlier in the year. And so I moved off of that pretty quickly. But
truthfully, I know we'll talk about GPPs, but truthfully, we should have considered Tyron Williams as cash viable. Because I played him a ton in GPPs because I don't care what Sean McVay says. You could all the projections put in Royce Freeman's rushing share, and just McVay just takes one running back and he runs him into the ground and any game.
But I mean, Royce did get the work. Royce did have more than 10 rushing.
They were alternating drives the same way that Henderson and him were. It was just that Kyron totally smashed on his drives.
I don't think you could have played Kyron going into this without seeing that volume first at the price tag. Because he wasn't depressed.
Played a guy that got one target in Justin Watson. He gets
at 3K.
One touchdown.
one touchdown.
Right.
You're forgetting.
Royce Freeman had 13 carries. Kyron had 16. So it was almost like a 50-50 there because they were alternating. I think the big difference is we saw in the passing game, they trust Kyron there. And Kyron went 6 for 6, 61, and got those two TDs. And I don't think Royce even had a target. So you see, they definitely use them differently.
They even did that with Henderson, right? Like when they were alternating drives, they were never throwing the ball to Royce. All right. Other thing, I mean, it was like literally, it was the most straightforward week in cash ever. If you lost, it doesn't mean you're bad. I think that. I mean, I could have lost very easily.
The thing is that I scored the worst out of the bunch of us, and I didn't lose money.
Well, this is now the new thing that DFS touts say, Blender, is that all of us say, oh, well, you know, I didn't cash the massive $50 double up, but I got a lot of soft action on head to head. So that's just,
I played him on FanDuel.
Blender, did you win on FanDuel, buddy?
Yeah, of course I won on FanDuel.
Everybody wins.
But I mean, how hard was it to build a team on? If this show was a FanDuel, a focus cash game thing, would be like 4 minutes long.
We tried to do it. I played cash on FanDuel in the COVID year because I was so bored and I had nothing to do. and I would try and do like 3 minutes of it. And it would literally just be like, you could play the highest projected guy at every position except for the wide receiver three. And if you click the wrong wide receiver three, you lost. And if you click the right one, you won. So it was not great content.
I lost on FanDuel this week.
Herzig, buddy. Herzig lost on FanDuel, man. So you gotta put the tout cone of shame on for that one.
I played this guy named AJ Brown, and that kind of screwed up the rest of my lineup.
So I have not played on FanDuel yet this year, but I observe through the chats, and what I see is that basically, like, if a Cooper Kupp, an AJ Brown, Alvin Kamara, whatever, if they have like a weirdly low price, and then you play them anyway, and then they suck, it's like, well, it just doesn't matter. Like you can't really eat an $8,000 guy getting you 9 points on FanDuel. You'll just get absolutely smoked.
There was no McCaffrey. If you got McCaffrey, it's so much easier on FanDuel. But when there's no McCaffrey, now you spend up for AJ Brown and AJ Boss.
Okay, let's do GPPs. We'll try and do this. We'll try and go a little quicker. So this week, I've been playing bad in tournaments. I'm having the best cash game year probably of my career ever on DraftKings, and I am giving a lot of it back in tournaments. So this week, I just looked at a lot of sim stuff. I didn't run anything directly from the sims, but I was like sorting by ROI and, you know, all this stuff. And I landed on a team that I really liked, that I thought was really good. And I'm kind of bummed that this team did not work out. This is the team that I played in. This was the smaller red zone. So this was the 100K red zone. I played Kyler Murray. I stacked him with Greg Dortch and Trey McBride. At running back, I did Kyren Williams, Derrick Henry, and DeAndre Swift. All the sim sites, Run the Sims, Saber Sim. I do not have access to the solver, so I don't know if this is true, but they all loved DeAndre Swift because he was, when you didn't have one of the quarterbacks from that game, because he was such great leverage on that game. Then I played Puka Nacua and Rashid Shaheed is the other wide receivers here, and I played the Patriots defense on this team. That team was a 36% ROI team from the last set of sims that I looked at. I felt like insanely sharp clicking that team in. It was one of those teams where I was like, I actually think this team can win. And Shaheed died suddenly. Puka Nacua did nothing because Kyren Williams took all of the available points for the Los Angeles Rams. Derrick Henry, I mean, it's a pretty classic stat line to get two touchdowns and not top 20 points. I mean, that is pretty classic. Derrick Henry on DraftKings.com. But I did. Kyler and Mahomes were my two favorite quarterback plays of the week. So all my teams were variations of double stacks, and I actually triple stacked Mahomes in the other red zone with Rashi Rice, Justin Watson, and Travis Kelce. No bring back there. Anyone have any ROI related comments on that? We got nothing.
I think you gave up too much projection, but that's just me.
Yeah, you think what with Shaheed? You think Shaheed was too far off?
No, I had a bunch of Shaheed. No, I don't think Shaheed was the. Say the team again.
Kyler, Kyren, Derrick Henry, DeAndre Swift, Puka Nacua, Greg Dortch, Rashid Shaheed, McBride, and the Patriots.
Okay, that isn't that bad. Puka.
Puka, I mean, was could've... the he was the off the wall. He was the single digit owned play in that lineup.
Right. Well, I mean, I've learned in the past year from obviously Sims and just studying like what lineups, even in my stuff that is much more blunt, that you much prefer if you obviously the stuff with Swift, you're correct. Like the more lower owned, especially running backs, because running backs have less correlation with other players in your lineup. So if a lot of people are playing Hurts, if a lot of people are playing AJ Brown, and you have a 1% on Swift, like it's going to mean a lot leverage-wide because it's negatively correlated to the passing game. But another thing that you see is that when your correlated pieces are the lower owned parts, the rest of your lineup practically doesn't even matter. Like basically that if you play, like here's my lineup from the $100 spy that you may make fun of who I played at quarterback. But
Mac Jones, please say Mac Jones.
No, Derek Carr.
Yep, I am going to make fun of that.
I played.
No, it's actually fine. It's actually fine.
Derek Carr, Chris. I like Chris Olave at 6,600 with everyone playing.
Yeah.
The other guys.
Hard agree. Yeah.
Right. So what? Derek Carr 1.1%. Olave 4.4% out with a concussion after 21 points in the first half. Juwan Johnson 1.1% at tight end because I wanted if. How is Carr going to get 300 yards without like multiple? I didn't want to take up Shaheed two wide receiver spots. But then once I have a 1% owned quarterback in a 4,000 entry contest, a 4% Olave and a 1% Johnson, my rest of my lineup is Pacheco, Kyren Williams, Tank Dell, Michael Pittman, Trey McBride, Titans defense. It's just like, give me the best projected, just give me as much projection. And I preferred Kyren Williams. If I was going to play Pittman in my lineup, I wasn't going to play Jonathan Taylor.
I didn't play Taylor in any tournaments. I did all Kyren, Swift, Bijan, and Pacheco as my running backs. Bijan, I feel one of these days where I feel robbed because my stacks were wrong, but my individual plays were right. I mean, that's why you just play whoever you want, right? Because then it doesn't matter and you just can't.
But the thing is that when you stack low owned stuff, then you don't have to worry about, like, feel free to play. You don't have to go find a 2% on wide receiver that scores 25 points. It's just like if Olave does well, and if Olave puts up 40 points, it's hard for, like, dude, we see Millie Maker winners that have like the quarterback 7 on the slate with 21 points because like the only reason that guy is in that lineup is because he's correlated with the 2% on guy that put up 40 points. And the quarterback position is kind of flat anyway. So, like, why would I put in, like, I could play this lineup with Gardner Minshew to correlate with Pittman. But it does. Do I want to play a 14% on Minshew versus a 1% on Carr? Like, and then change the defense? Like, if Olave is the key, and Olave and Juwan Johnson are the key pieces that are low-owned, I want the low-owned person that correlates with those two people.
All right, Herzig, you're up, man. Give us a masterclass. Give us a screenshot worthy team here.
I'm the one sitting in the back of the class right now. I decided to play a Jake Browning because so I'm looking through things and I'm like, okay, this is a slate. We've got three of the big QBs out there. We got, you know, Hurts, Mahomes, Josh Allen, everyone's in Arden Lawrence. I thought that Kyler was going to get pulled up because everyone's playing Trey McBride.
Nate's like, I can't believe you stole my thunder. I was about to post a Jake Browning team.
I made so much money in The Sims this morning before lock happened. Like, my ROI was so high. It was just green, green, green. Jamar Chase looked like one of the most epic plays out there. And then despite, I think he had like 50 yards in tip drill today and he still finished like 12 points. I just did a few different Jake Browning teams, but as you can imagine, I just swapped as much as I could off in the afternoon and ended up on some Kyren for some min caches. But I think process wise, Jake Browning actually, maybe it's against the better, you know, not as good of a defense as Pittsburgh, but like actually has some rushing efficiency. Probably better just go with the single stack with a Jamar when he's going to be virtually, let's see, I think he was like 2%. Let me take a look at how low he was. Yeah, 2.5%, 1% Jake Browning. So like Sklansky bucks, ka-ching.
My only criticism of that, well, I got two. I got two criticisms.
You should have a bunch, but yeah.
So one, I never mind that play when it's a guy who ran a shit ton in college. Like if Malik Cunningham gets a $4,000 start for the Patriots against, you know, whatever team is going to beat them by 13, I got like no issue with that because he could just get 16 running, right? You score a 54-yard rushing touchdown and you're pretty much there. But the other thing is, I really don't hate that on a slate where it's like, oh, well, I wanted to play Tyreek and McCaffrey in the same lineup, but I couldn't do it. And I guess Chase is that caliber of a player. Like we've seen him do that ceiling, but without like all the sim running back plays were in the 6,000s. Like I didn't really see Kamara or Barkley at all at the top of my sim stuff. So like I would not like, I think the Jake Browning play in like a total vacuum of this slate, I would not do it, but I like in the total context of DFS, I don't think it's as bad as being like, I'm the guy who played Jake Browning would say.
Can we talk about someone else in that game? Justin Watson was 3,000, right?
Yeah.
Pat Freiermuth was 2,900.
He was 2,500 last week.
And like everyone loves punting a tight end, and everyone's like, nope, you just play Trey McBride and don't think about tight end. And then you have considering Pat Freiermuth in cash games at close to 4,000, like earlier in the season or the end of last season. And I know the game total was low, but was that like an oversight that $2,900 Pat Freiermuth wasn't
it,
even?
It
like
was totally. It actually was completely an oversight. It was just like he came back off the IR last week, and the team looked like shit, and he didn't run full routes, and so probably. I mean, look. I mean, if anyone's worked on median projections, when a guy comes back and doesn't play a ton and sees his targets not be great, that feeds into the projection itself, and he's going to have a lower median target share than he normally would.
It also just felt ugly. I mean, yes, I know new offensive coordinator, new play caller, but like Pittsburgh, I mean, what, Pickett's thrown for like 175 yards a game. He's not throwing for more than one touchdown. So like for us to imagine that Freiermuth is going to, 100 plus receiving yards? I don't know. It felt pretty crazy, but
You played an offensive player from a team that's led by Mac Jones.
Yeah, as a running back.
As a running back, it's different.
Or a defense, I played that too. But yeah, so with the Jamar Chase, if you're going to play Jamar Chase and you say, I want to play Jamar Chase, does it make sense then say, okay, I need to play Jake Browning? And I think that's the only way you get on Jake Browning. And
how long was Jamar Chase in the contest that you played?
Two and a half percent.
I was going to say had to have been like none.
But that goes with the concept of the same thing I did with Olave. It's like, if you're going to play Jamar Chase and he puts up 40 points, like how does that have play the cheap quarterback along with him? And then you don't have to worry about the rest of your lineup anymore. You could just play the best plays.
Yeah. 100%.
All right, Nate, I don't know if you're going to be able to top Jake Browning, but bring us home, buddy. I mean, in my mind, the perfect Nate play here would either be Matt Stafford and he turns over the absolute nuts because something in his stuff told him that, or like Baker Mayfield here feels like a Nate spot, actually.
No, unfortunately, it wasn't. I played bad this week. Like looking at this team, I did what I've been doing the last few weeks, and I just went really heavy on a team that I felt good about. The issue is the ownership was way higher than I thought it would be. So I did a full-on Bills stack with Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, Dalton Kincaid, Khalil Shakir. And it was way higher owned individually. I thought Diggs was like probably going to be single digits in the small field.
I thought Diggs would be Jamar Chase level owned, honestly, just the way the projection shook out.
And he was 20%. When I saw that, I was like, this is
did
a
no one play
team.
AJ Brown?
No. So yeah, Diggs was every one of the Bills players was over 20%. So it was a terrible, terrible, terrible stack. I mean, even the combined stack. So normally, like Blender, you were talking about like when you do your stack, remove the rest of the field and just look at who has that combinatorial stack. Normally, when I do these big stacks, I'm like sharing with one or two or other people in these contests. There's 25 other people who did that exact four-man stack, which doesn't feel good at all. So I played really bad. Looking back, I wish I would have, if I would have known the ownerships, I wouldn't have played that again. But yeah, so I went with a full-on Bills stack. And then I filled out pretty chalky around it with Jonathan Taylor, Justin Watson, Trey McBride, Patriots D, and then Derrick Henry was someone else I thought was going to be way lower owned than he was. He ended up like 30% owned. And I was like, these ownerships just blew my mind. So I played bad from an ownership perspective. But I mean, I did think like going into this slate that the Bills stack was going to be under owned. So many people were on the AJ Brown side. A lot of people were on the earlier stuff that I just thought, a full-on Bills stack. Nate, not enough people were talking Diggs. So,
Nate, if you looked at Sims, the problem with the Eagles side was the, like, you if you wanted to play Hurts, like the salary dynamics of the lineup became
too expensive.
right, too expensive. Yeah. So, like, if you wanted to play that game and you ran it through anything that you wanted to, anything, any type of process, you would have found that it vastly preferred the Allen side. Not necessarily Diggs, but if you ran it through stuff, you would see that.
Well, yeah, because Shakir, Davis, and Kincaid were all affordable. Yeah, the number one most plus EV guy with like my settings and everything that I got from that game was Swift, which is hilarious considering that he was like the 11th highest scoring player in that game. I mean, Nate, I got no issues. I got really no issues with how you played that one. Seems fine to me.
Going into the slate, I didn't, but with these ownerships, it was bad. Like, I mean, Diggs was like the third or fourth highest owned wide receiver on that in the red zone. Like it that's crazy to me.
On the main slate?
Yeah.
That sounds afternoon only type of ownership.
I know. It was Nate plays
like these crazy, he's not playing the big spy. Nate plays like the spies, like the $100 and the $50 single entries. There are like 300 people in them.
One was the $100K red zone. It was 2,300 entries. I mean,
all right. Stand corrected.
And yeah, Diggs was the fourth highest. It was Tank Dell, Michael Pittman, Josh Downs, Judson Watson, and then Khalil Shakir and Stephon Diggs were the next two highest owned. He was more owned than Christian Kirk. I the Bills ownership
more
shocked
than Pittman?
Me. No, right below Pittman.
Okay. Because my projection for Diggs was like 2 points lower than people that were. Like I had like Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua like at a literal higher mean projection than Diggs, and Diggs was more expensive. So like, seems weird that he would even get up to that.
I know a lot of people played the Bills stack. Is like what the way I'm looking at it is.
So what was Josh Allen's ownership?
20%.
So there you go. That's the reason.
I'm looking at stuff right now, and I'm looking at this team I played in the red zone that had a 4% owned Mahomes and a 3% owned Rashi Rice, and I'm just like, I'm tilted.
Yeah, looking at ownership, I would have much rather been on that.
Oh, we're going to get there, guys. I mean, over a long enough timeline, I don't know if it's going to be this lifetime, but eventually these decisions are going to come our way. All right, guys, let's get out of here. I'm going to let Herzig, what would you like to promote? What would you like the people to watch, read, or listen to?
Nothing. Just follow me on Twitter. That's easy enough. This is appreciate you joining me. I'm glad I at least brought my gills for the GPPs, even though Nate and I just, you know, got the cash nuts, but it's cool.
Yeah. You guys did. I was not prepared. I was not prepared to say that Nate and Herzig played better than me, but they both did. They had what I think was probably the right team. Jordan, what can people listen to, watch, or read?
Well, obviously theory@dfs.com, but do we count Nate saying that he played bad by playing the Allen Sacks as taking an L?
No, because it's not even funny.
But that doesn't count.
Because the only time Nate, it only counts as taking an L if Sammy and I are laughing at him and he won't do it. Like playing 19 commanders in one lineup and then being like, actually the Sims told me it was good. Like that, It doesn't count. It doesn't count. Nate has to do something that is causing everyone else to laugh at him and for him to explain. If you just get deep enough in the spreadsheets.
To me, the most entertaining part is I'm listening and I agree with Nate. And my favorite part is when you two laugh and I go, Davis and Sammy, they're the idiots.
Yeah, these two.
That's the bit. That's
the bit.
That's the bit. Davis and Sammy think they're sharp, but everybody on the other end goes, wait a second. They're wrong.
Yeah,
like
guys,
We
cannot be taking people behind the curtain right now. You're literally ruining the magic of the show. It's not good. We can't go there. Everyone, thank you very much for listening. We will be back to your regularly scheduled programming for the Gilcast next week. Later.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.